Welcome to the Iron Bow TechSource podcast series. Today we're talking with Paul Christman, Vice President for Federal for Dell Software. Dell is one of TechSource's contributors, so we're very excited to have you here today, Paul. Thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here, Margaret.
Great, thanks. So today, as you know, we'll be talking a little bit about National Cybersecurity Awareness Month, which is in October, runs through the whole month. It's a very, it's a big event that's been going on for many years, and it's basically the theme this year is staying safe online is a shared responsibility. So we wanted to talk to you guys about that today. Our shared responsibility is the theme, what does that mean for federal agencies and industries today?
Yeah, this is a great topic to talk about for not only the month of October, but also year-round. We think of shared responsibility, meaning cybersecurity isn't just a matter of using the right technology products or exclusively the mission of the IT organization. And in a recent survey with Dell SecureWorks, one of our divisions, we found that 70%, full-on 70% of security breaches were attributed to human elements, and 90% of malware required human interaction before infecting the target. So clearly the participation of the end user is critical in providing security. It's not just a matter of IT providing the security. So we've coined a phrase which I love. We talk about building a human firewall, but the human firewall is a group of educated users who join in the fight against cyber breaches and espionage and crime. And we need to make the users an asset instead of a liability with the security awareness training that we usually propose. So it's about getting the users involved because the users are one of the trigger points for quite a bit of the cybersecurity incidences.
That's great. Good. Yeah, shocking numbers, obviously. But I think that it always comes back down to that, not always, but most of the time, somebody clicked a link, somebody opened a file, something like that, and then the next thing you know, there's a big breach. So good for you guys. That's great. Do you help when you do the building, when you help a client or a customer build a human firewall, do you also provide them with some, you know, training materials and things like that?
Yes, we do. And the training actually we think of as the first step. A couple of frightening numbers is that 54% of employers don't provide information security training to their employees. It's half. Half of the employees don't get trained by their employers on cybersecurity training. We are constantly surprised by this. Even though it's documented that 76% less is spent on a security event when the employees are actually trained. So this whole idea of, okay, we don't have enough money for training or we don't have enough time for training, I mean, it doesn't make financial sense, and it also doesn't make good cybersecurity sense. And so we do talk about training. Our SecureWorks division has a whole series of not only training, which is the first part, but training really needs to be accompanied by testing. And training itself is no good unless you actually test to see if the training's changed the employee's behavior. So we have a whole series of recommendations on training, how it's delivered. But the other part of the training is testing. And we often do follow-ups, and it's kind of funny sometimes, and sometimes it's kind of sad. But we actually go through the idea of pretending to be someone trying to gain access to a system, and we do what's traditionally called penetration testing after the training, before the training, to see if there was any demonstrable improvement. And when we do these, the testing after the fact, we realize that the training has to be consistent. It has to be consumable. It has to be entertaining. It has to be engaging, all those things you'd normally do with training. And it also needs to be reinforced just throughout the year and also reinforced through testing as well.
Wow, that's great. Yeah. I can't even imagine 54%, but I've read some of those statistics, and I think that's one of the things that the Alliance puts up on their website is some of those statistics about how, you know, it is a problem, especially for smaller businesses. They're afraid to spend the money on the training, but then in the back end, they spend so much more trying to fix their systems and things like that. So I don't know if it was the SecureWorks team at Dell, but you guys recently released a mobile safety checklist. So can you tell us some about the tips that you guys suggest for agencies to follow to keep the employees safe online, specifically with in terms of mobility, because a lot of people are accessing data, their agency's data, through mobile devices?
Yeah, it was actually part of our mobile device management team. And as you might imagine, Dell as a corporation touches a whole series of devices that are mobile. They could be a laptop, they could be even smartphones, these or tablets. And these devices present some both unique but also common challenges with what we've learned with fixed devices, things like desktops or other kinds of computers, servers, which don't typically move around as much. Mm-hmm. And what we've recommended is two things. On the IT side, we encourage people to look at data at rest and also data in motion. These two concepts lead us to technology recommendations. So for data at rest, we look at mobile data encryption or data protection. And the techniques that we use on smartphones and also the techniques that we use on laptops or tablets, again, have been proven out with other earlier technologies around servers and fixed devices. So we, again, look at mobile encryption to protect data at rest. We also look at creating partitions or containers on these devices that allow folks to have separate personas on these devices, which allows for the separation of your personal data and your work data. Partitions and containers have been around for a while, but they've been kind of difficult to manage and a little bit unwieldy, and most users don't appreciate them. But one of the things we're doing with our mobile device management tools is making those partitions or containers a lot easier to manage and a lot less intrusive for the users. Other things mm-hmm. we recommend for mobile devices is obviously endpoint patch management. The difference with the mobile devices is the kinds of operating systems or applications that are on those devices typically different from the operating system that's on a desktop device. So we have a whole series of tools to help around patch management, whether it's an iOS device or an Android device or a Windows mobile device. Again, the technology exists. We just need to extend it to these unusual and highly mobile devices. The last thing I'd say is we need what we call context-aware access. And this is still on the IT side of the house. Context-aware access. So I'll use the example of my smartphone. My smartphone, I am permitted to have access to my company email. Well, the only reason I'm allowed to have that access is, first and foremost, I have the username and password for my email account, but it goes much further than that. If I don't have the device encrypted, if I don't have a sufficiently strong password unlock key, if I don't have a PIN to get into my mail client, if I don't satisfy those additional criteria, my device won't be allowed to access my email. So it's context-aware access, taking into account some other factors beyond simply username and password, especially on mobile devices. This helps us protect the data at rest and also the data in motion, because I can't access it maybe if I've lost it or if somebody's trying to access my smartphone. But it's more than just a simple binary, do I have a username and password, can I get in? It's all those other things with mobile devices that we need to take into account that says that this user request for information, in this case just email, is a reasonable risk for the organization mm-hmm. to permit. So that's a long answer. There's a whole series of things that we're recommending. None of them are particularly earth-shattering, but now they've become a lot more manageable and a lot easier to implement. Forgive the long answer, but I'm going to say on the user side, I have to say, please don't bypass the security. Join the effort, take the training, don't work around, but work with the IT and all the things that we're putting in place to protect the data at rest and in motion.
Right, right. Yeah, well, you know, my next question for you is going to be about some of the recent, you know, high-profile attacks, including OPM and Ashley Madison. And I think, you know, what's obviously one of the lessons we can learn is specifically from Ashley Madison, in my opinion, is you know, sometimes your users do dumb things on your on their work stuff, but you know, on their work devices. But you know, despite this, you know, obviously, as we've said, you've thrown out some amazing numbers. But despite these ongoing discussions about cybersecurity, I mean, Sony was a huge thing last year. Then we had the OPM this summer. Now we have Ashley Madison. We continue to see those. So, what lessons can be learned from these types of things?
Well, I often say, don't underestimate what people will do with computers. That's the first lesson to learn. One of the things that we're finding specifically, especially with folks, about 63% of employees admit that they're using their work computer for personal use every day. And 63% are using their work computer for personal use every single day. And 83% admit to using a work computer for personal activities at least sometimes. So the number of people that have clearly isolated their work and their personal, is that the line is blurring. And what we're finding is, especially in these breaches, we can't assume that somebody's going to have a perfectly clean, dedicated work computer. All of the things that we try to do around isolating the perimeter and setting up a high barrier really has become very, very porous because people are starting to use these computers not just for work activities. And so we can't just rely on a single kind of technology to protect. So as it relates to breaches, recent breaches, perimeter protection alone or encryption alone wouldn't have been sufficient. It needs to be layered and connected and context aware. So when we say layered, it's saying, okay, not just use a firewall, not just use simple username and password, but we have to have layers of security that improve the security posture of the organization and reduce risk. Now, I'm going to take a second and talk about three things that really make a difference as it relates to the most recent breaches, and it has to do with privileged users. Most of the large breaches lately have dealt with compromised, elevated or privileged user credentials. Those compromised credentials are simple usernames and passwords that are then used to gain really, really broad access to a variety of systems without an awful lot of oversight. So the one thing that I would learn from most of the breaches recently is that we need to control, monitor, track, restrict privileged user access with very, very strong security.
That's great. Yeah. Okay. You know, obviously, there's, like you said, you know, you may set up your the IT department sets up the perimeter, sets everything up, but if the user is in there not, you know, maybe doing refreshes, even as simple as that, right, then you've got a problem on a device that you're not, you may not be aware of.
And you've absolutely hit on something that was part of the cybersecurity sprint, which is effective patch management, which we've known about for decades, really is one of the most basic forms of IT hygiene that wasn't given the proper attention. And simply patching known vulnerabilities would improve the security posture of most federal agencies.
Okay. So let's go on to the positive side for a change here. We've said a lot of stuff about how folks aren't getting things done, but there's got to be a few examples of agencies out there that are doing an excellent job in terms of teaching or modeling cybersecurity protection. And I'm sure you know them. You're very deep in the federal space. Do you have a few examples of some agencies who've done some stellar work in teaching or modeling cybersecurity protection?
Yeah, and as you said, there are folks who are doing very, very good work. One of the things that everyone should understand is that the CIO's office and Tony Scott's office, the White House CIO, routinely publishes the results of what we're calling cross-agency priorities or CAP. Goal progress. The cross-agency priorities are things that everyone has agreed in the federal government are important to do. And these are reported, both good, bad, and otherwise, every single quarter. So the scorebook is there. People can look at it. People can measure their performance against a couple of key goals. The one thing that I would come back to is based on what we've learned from the recent breaches and the need to control privileged access, I would look at the results from Q2 fiscal 15, and also the results of the cybersecurity sprint, which really moved from about April through July or August. So if we look at the progress there, we see two kinds of good examples. One is someone like the GSA, and the GSA had moved from 94% strong authentication for both privileged users and regular or unprivileged users. They were already at 94. They moved up to 99. So that's a good example of someone that was doing well and did even better. Now, on the flip side, you've got folks like DOT. They were actually fairly poor. They started at 32% of all users using strong authentication. And strong authentication usually would be a username and a password plus something like a PIV card or a CAC card, depending on what part of the organization you're with. In the case of DOT, they would do PIV card integration. And they moved from the 32% baseline in April up to 97% at the end of the cybersecurity sprint, really at the end of July. So fantastic improvement. And that shows what can be done using existing infrastructure for multi-factor authentication and how quickly we can improve the security posture to address a very particular specific issue around privileged user access and strengthening that one particular attribute of security. But because we've learned from what's happened, I think that we can take great pride in being able to either be good and get a little bit better or to be in need of help and get an awful lot better very, very quickly.
That's great. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for your time today and for visiting with us here at TechSource, talking about National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And as Paul said, it shouldn't be just 1 month. It should be an ongoing and year-round effort by companies and agencies and their employees. Do you have anything else to add before we close up, Paul?
No, this is good to talk about. I always say it's sort of like looking at everybody who has a new exercise regimen in January after the new year. We get committed to it, and by February we're a little bit maybe off, and then by March we all come back to our old habits. We need to be persistent, vigilant, and change our behavior. We'll use the month of October as the Cybersecurity Awareness Month, but those habits need to carry forward with us for the rest of our cyber lives.
Great. Thank you so much. Great advice.